The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Yo, what is going on, guys? Welcome to another episode here of the EPA podcast brought to you by Bleeding Green Nation. I'm one of your hosts today, Victor Williams. You can follow me on all social platforms over at the Philly Pod. Appreciate you guys for checking out this weekly edition of the show. Following a Eagles win as they defeated the Packers on Sunday night, 40-33, behind a record-setting performance on multiple fronts by Jalen Hurts, of course. Joining me as always, my co-host on the show. You can follow him on Twitter at Half and Half TPL. You can find his YouTube channel of all the breakdowns. I'm sure he has videos up of some of the things that have occurred already on Sunday night. He is Shane Half. What's going on, man? We got to be feeling good after the Eagles sit at 10-1 in firm command of the NFC's top seed.
Yeah, it feels good. I haven't had as much time as normal to go back and watch tape and make videos and all that. I've had sick kids home all week, but we're recording during nap time right now, so we'll see how that goes. But it does feel good to get behind the mic and talk Eagles again, especially after a victory. The Eagles offense, they kind of seem to break out of a slump. It's been a little rough the last couple weeks, but they dropped 40 on the Packers, so it's hard to feel bad about that.
Yeah, they also allowed 33 to the Packers, a team that was like routinely barely putting up 21 points. So that is a point I'm sure we will get into. I feel like there must be something like going around. A lot of my like friends, families, like sick, like flu like symptoms. It must be that time of the year where everybody's getting sick. So hopefully kids are doing all right and don't come kicking the door down in the middle of this. But yes, Jalen Hurts backpacking the team even more so than he has been all season long, increasing his MVP stock along the way on the primetime stage. For what it's worth, he outdueled Aaron Rodgers. I know that doesn't hold a lot of weight this year, but to do it, it's still a feat in its own right, en route to the 40-33 victory. So as we all know, I guess I should run down the list of things that Jalen Hurts did accomplish against Green Bay record-wise. So I, for the people that haven't heard it, you know, ad nauseum to this point, because I'm sure it's been run off the run across the media a million times to this point. But these are basically the five things that Jalen Hurts and the Eagles were able to accomplish on Sunday night. So first, as we all know, the first player in NFL history with 125-plus passing yards and 125-plus rushing yards in a half. First player in history to do that. Also, the first player in history with at least 6,500 passing yards and 1,500 rushing yards in their first 30 starts. First player in history with 150 passing yards, 150 rushing yards, and 2 passing touchdowns in a regular season game. I think Kaepernick did it in a playoff game, but Hurts is the first one to do it in a regular season game. As we all know, he broke the franchise record for most rushing yards by a quarterback in Eagles history, breaking Mike Vick's prior record of 130 set back in 2010. And Miles Sanders, Hurts and Miles Sanders became the first Eagles teammates to rush for over 140 yards in the same game. So Shane, when you hear all of that stuff, all of these things that the Eagles were able to do in one single game, I mean, how does it make you feel that Jalen Hurts is seemingly breaking records every week, more especially doing it on primetime in front of the nation?
Yeah, I mean, he tops 100 rushing yards in the first quarter. Mm-hmm. And he only ended like 20 something yards shy of the single game record NFL wide. And you just get the feeling that Nick Sirianni didn't realize that, or the way he is, he would have probably chased that record too. becomes the first player to rush and pass for 150 plus yards and multiple touchdowns in a game.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of it, Miles Sanders has a career high in rushing yards as well, 143, two touchdowns. So they rushed for 363 yards on the night. And we sat on this podcast last week and told you the Packers' run defense was bad. It was going to be a big rushing day. I still didn't expect this. So it was nice to see them able to just pound the rock. It's vintage throwback football, and they were just moving guys on the defensive line. So it's always good. It kind of gets your offensive line back in a groove. Offensive line loves to go attack. And so impressive performance by the Eagles on the ground. And Hurts had some really nice scrambles too. All of those weren't designed runs. You know, you think of like that first third down on the opening drive, the third and 10, and he tucks it and runs. It's not a designed run, but he made like four guys miss. And you could just kind of sense that it was going to be a special night for Hurts running the football. And he certainly didn't disappoint.
Yeah, I was almost for certain that they were going to go for that record. It would have been funny for Justin Fields to have that record for all of 3 weeks before Jalen Hurts came up and broke it. I was certain that he was going to break it. But yeah, the records are certainly nothing to scoff at. And for him to not only show what he could do on the ground, but his transformation as a passer this season has been something to watch as well. As we both know, guys who have been watching the film and watching him progress week to week, seemingly it feels like he's improving every single week. Some of the throws he's making is throws that I couldn't fathom him making 5 years from now, let alone in a few weeks. That throw at the end of the half to Quez Watkins right at the pylon, knowing that Quez was going to be there, and the adjustment that Quez made was impressive as well. And the throw that I saw you tweet during the game where he pretty much scrambled like 15, 20 yards back off the back foot and still basically put it in Quez's hands. If Mahomes does that, you see it up and down the the timeline. You see it tweeted nationally. But the things that Hurts is doing is man, we were saying last week that Mahomes is probably going to run away with the MVP because Hurts won't have the stats to contend. But man, I feel like he closed the gap with that last performance.
Yeah, that throw you mentioned. Well, both of those throws to Quez, the one that was the touchdown, just the confidence in wide receiver three. Like, this isn't him throwing it to AJ Brown, who we know that he likes to throw the ball to in those situations. This isn't him throwing it to Devonta Smith, who they have really good timing with. This is wide receiver three that hasn't been super involved this year. And he gets the man coverage, the single coverage that he likes, and he just puts it to the pylon on the back shoulder. And the confidence to do that puts it in the perfect spot. And Quez just comes back to it and makes the catch. Just great chemistry between those guys. And then the other one, man, to scramble right and then spin and go to the left and then stop and flip his hips. And he puts the ball on Quez's hands. Like, it's not a touchdown, but man, that's the most, that might be the most impressive throw Jalen's made this year. And it's not a criticism of Quez Watkins. Like, that would have been an unbelievably difficult catch. Even if he brings it in, I don't know if he could have got both feet down, but on a third and goal, or well, it wasn't third and goal. It was like third and 10 from the 12, but essentially third and goal, just to know that I'm going to give my receiver a chance and only him a chance, and to be able to put the ball in that spot. It was just impressive stuff. And so honestly, the most impressive throw of the season for Hurts, and it resulted in an incompletion.
Yeah, I couldn't believe that throw even made it to Quez's hands. I thought for sure that I was just going to soar out the back of the end zone. That's pinpoint precision when you're running around and trying to avoid pressure and the whole bit. And we as people, like as numbers guys and analytics guys, and I wanted to make aware the notion, and Shane, I'm pretty sure you know where this is going, of the RPO basically. So. There's a lot of like rival fan bases alike that basically say Hurts is only this successful because of the RPO. They try to make it sound like it's this glorified form of the Wildcats, the simple offense that any mobile quarterback could be successful in. When my counter argument to that was that it's quite the opposite. I think it's an advanced version of the play action, because you not only have to analyze what's going on around you, but you have to also execute it at a high level and make pinpoint decisions within, what do you have, two and a half seconds to make a decision before defenders are either tackling you or tackling the ball carrier, or the coverage is already somewhere else and you have to make that decision. I feel like the intelligence level needed to comprehend all of that in such a short amount of time makes it an advanced level of an offense, not the other way around. I already know where you stand as far as the RPO, and you have all the numbers that dictate whether Hurts has truly been successful because of the RPO or not. But what do you make of that notion that basically Hurts is an RPO merchant, as Dallas fans will tell you?
Well, first of all, if and I won't deny the fact that RPOs, they're simpler reads. RPOs, play action, rollouts, those sorts of things help your quarterback out.
Any quarterback.
Yeah, and so if the argument is, well, that's why he's good, then my question is, why doesn't your offensive coordinator do that? Like, why is your offensive coordinator trying to play with one hand tied behind his back? This isn't a challenge to see how difficult you can make life on your quarterback. But that aside, you know, I quote tweeted your tweet about this with the stats.
The double inception.
Yeah. If you remove all of Hurts' RPO passes, which accounts for just under 23% of his passes, if you take those away and you just stack him up to the NFL as a whole, he's still eighth in completion percentage. He's sixth in QB rating. He's fourth in air yards per attempt. And he's second in interception percentage. And interception percentage, like, that means he's got the second lowest percentage.
Right.
So even if you remove that, like, in almost every category you want to come up with, he's a top 6 to 8 guy. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't believe the number of people that thought that somehow I was taking a shot at
sliding Hurts.
Yeah,
I was reading the comments. Sure. I was like, I think people misunderstood.
Yeah, I'm not sure how people got that, but it's undeniable that Hurts benefits from the RPO game. But if you remove it completely from the splits, he's still quarterbacking at a phenomenal level this season. So it just comes down to, he's good without it. It's not a gimmick propping him up, but why wouldn't you make life easier on your quarterback when you can?
Exactly. And mind you, Nick Foles, like, we RPO'd our asses all the way to the Super Bowl, like, off it with Nick Foles, a guy that wasn't the most mobile guy ever. So
the funniest thing there too is in 2017 they barely ran RPOs for Carson Wentz, and then Nick Foles
got in there.
RPO Central.
That is hilarious. I think the most special thing about Hurts this season has been his third and fourth down efficiency. I feel like once you get to third down, Hurts becomes virtually unguardable regardless of the distance. On third down this season, I think I have the right year. On third down this season, Jalen Hurts, 40, so basically 40 out of 60, so 67% completion percentage, 29 first downs. This is all passing. We'll get to the rushing. 29 first downs, 0 interceptions, 3 touchdowns, 111.3 passer rating. When you get to the rushing, he has 22 rushing first downs and 2 touchdowns, all coming on third down. So the Mr. Move the Chains thing is becoming like a status quo of Jalen Hurts. I've been very impressed with how he's been able to constantly move the chains, keep his offense on the field, especially when there's the situations where the Eagles give the opposition very good field position with their lack of special teams. Before I get to that area, though, I did want to talk about Quez Watkins just a second, because you touched on him just a little bit. Shane, his first 8 games, Quez Watkins, and obviously Dallas Goedert going down factors into this, but his first 8 games, Quez Watkins, 13 targets, just 8 receptions, 113 yards, 1 touchdown. The last 3 games, 11 targets, 9 catches, 146 yards, and 2 touchdowns. So I know a lot of fans were screaming all this, like, I want to see Quez more involved. He's way too talented to be underutilized. I understand Zach Pascal is more efficient as a run blocker, but I would like to see Quez get more opportunities, and the Eagles have done just that in the last 3 weeks.
To your point on the third and fourth downs, the Eagles on third and fourth downs, they're second in the NFL in success rate. So converting third and fourth downs into first downs.
Second in the league?
Altogether? Second in the league, behind only the Bills. And they're fifth in EPA on third and fourth downs. So they've been highly efficient on third and fourth downs. A lot of it even goes into the QB sneaks, which didn't go so well in this game, but
teams are starting to figure
that
out.
This game, they worked really well. So a lot of it goes into that, but they're so good on third and fourth downs. Quez Watkins, I thought he would be more involved this year as a deep threat. I thought, you know, there just wouldn't be focus put on him by defenses. And as it turned out, there just wasn't focus put on him by offenses either. And, you know, with Dallas Goedert and with AJ Brown and Devontae Smith and the running game, there's just so many mouths to feed. I never thought that Quez wasn't a fine wide receiver 3. I think he's a pretty good wide receiver 3. But now with Dallas Goedert out, they're starting to go to him. And it's so nice to be able to shift your offense like that. Dallas Goedert's a huge piece to the offense. Mm-hmm. And with him out, you can't really replace that production. The tight ends have 1 reception in the last 2 games, but Quez Watkins has stepped up. And it's so big to be able to have someone, even at a different position, step up and fill the void with Dallas Goedert out. So, you know, it's a huge credit to Quez and to Jalen and to Shane Steichen and the offense to be able to pull that shift off.
Yeah, it's been vital, especially with A.J. Brown sick and all this going on. And Devontae Smith banged up. He came out of the game again. So he's been banged up the last couple of weeks. So it's good to have Quez pretty much well rested, not being utilized all that much over the first half of the season to come in and make a difference. So that's been exciting to watch. A lot of fans were asking for like OBJ. He's better than Quez. He'd be a better WR3 and all this. And I was partially offended to see that because we all knew how good Quez could be. Shayna, the weakest point of this team continues to be the special teams. Are there any final comments you had about the offense before I rant about how bad the special teams are?
No, by all means, go ahead and rant about the special teams.
So heading into the game, Green Bay had the 10th worst kick return average in the NFL at 20.8 yards. The Eagles allowed this guy, Keyshawn Nixon, who I haven't even heard of before Sunday, kick returns of 38 yards, 52 yards, and 53 yards. This guy was the first guy. He's the only returner after that game, the only returner in the NFL with multiple returns of over 50 yards. And they both happened in that game. I was shocked for one that Michael Clay was even brought back this season because the special teams wasn't great last year. The fact that he was brought back and now the punting situation isn't great. Jake Elliott has been the only constant really in the special teams. We can't cover kicks. We can't return kicks. We can't do anything as far as the kickoff is concerned. What is the problem? Michael Clay says it's blocking and this and that. I don't know what the issue is. Britton Covey's not great punt returning. Is this a unit issue? Is this a personnel issue? Is this a coaching issue? How do we rectify this? Because these are issues I do not want to see come postseason.
Yeah, the simple answer is I don't think the Eagles are going to rectify it this year. And you're going to have to cross your fingers and hope it doesn't cost them a game. In the offseason, they've got to move on from Michael Clay. And he was awful last year. I actually went back and searched my tweets for his name to see if I was saying things about him last year, and because I didn't remember, and I was.
I know I did.
Yeah, I was all over him last year too. So the Eagles haven't really emphasized special teams in terms of their personnel decisions. You know, they used to always have like that fourth safety that was the special teams ace and, you know, things like that. They just haven't prioritized that or returners. And Michael Clay obviously is an issue. There's technique issues that popped up early in the year with like the field goal blocks and things. So it's got to be. I tweeted out after the Eagles score the touchdown and then Jake Elliott missed the extra point. So it's 13-0. And then the Eagles gave up a kick return to midfield. And I just said, you know, it's unlikely to matter tonight, but it's going to matter in a game in January. And then, of course, the Packers scored 21 unanswered. People were like, yeah, it might have mattered tonight. And I thought for a minute it would, but the Eagles were able to pull it back. You just don't want to keep doing that. Like, the Packers are a great cautionary tale. They should have beat the 49ers last year and gone to the NFC title game. And they didn't because of special teams. Mm-hmm. And the Eagles' special teams has been horrendous. I don't even need positive plays from the special teams. Just stop having negative plays.
Yeah, I need neutral.
I literally don't care if you fair catch every punt. Just no fumbles on punt and kick returns. Don't fall for fakes. Let's stop giving up 50-yard kickoff returns. Like, I don't need positive plays. The Eagles' offense and defense is good enough. Just give me neutral plays, and I'll be happy on special teams.
Yeah, I could see if they had like one return, but like three decent returns that continuously gave Aaron Rodgers good field position. That's going to burn you at some point. And the Eagles have been fortunate that the offense has bailed them out. But you needed 40 points in this game to barely walk away. I'm praying that the special teams doesn't like you said cost them a game, especially in the playoffs. You mentioned that fourth safety is kind of an ace. I thought Shashere kind of fills that role. But he bounces back and forth between the practice squad at all. He doesn't stay on the final 53. But I think he's one of the better special teams players, especially now with CJ out, and you're going to have Reed Blankenship in there and all these things. I think Shashere would be a good get. They did release a couple guys on the practice squad, Kennedy Brooks and someone else. So I imagine a safety will probably make their way over at some point. They did sign a couple of receivers this morning, though, so I'll have to see what those names are and if they can contribute in any facet in the special teams. Defensively, I've already mentioned it. CJ Gardner-Johnson, Nick Sirianni just confirmed that it was the lacerated kidney. They don't know if they're going to place him on IIR yet. They say it's not season ending, but he laid a hit on Christian Watson, who's a big dude. I mean, he's kind of hard to get to the ground, bounced off him, was kind of stunned, hit the ground, and had to be carted off. So we're going to lose him for a few weeks. But Reed Blankenship, a guy who I was excited about when they signed him as an undrafted free agent, because I did look at him. I know he played 5 years in Tennessee, so it's not like he doesn't have the experience. He is there in Middle Tennessee, and he played a lot of snaps. I liked him over Kayvon because none of us like Kayvon Wallace to this point. So, and I liked what I saw, how active he was in preseason. So I wasn't totally shocked to see him lead the team in tackles after this. 6 tackles. He had the 1 tackle for loss. He had a pass defended. And, of course, his first career interception coming off Aaron Rodgers, which Darius Slay is very, very upset about. But how impressed were you with Reed Blankenship coming off the bench and making an immediate impact for this defense?
Yeah, Darius Slay is probably even more upset that first one went off his helmet.
Yeah. Josiah Scott literally on his hands. It's crazy.
Yeah. I thought that Reed Blankenship played well, especially in that spot. He'd only played 2 defensive snaps before this game. So the Eagles were doing some strange things with their safeties. Like on the interception, the Packers motioned across the formation. It changed their passing strength. And normally the Eagles safeties don't flip. They don't really play a weak side and strong side safety with Chauncey Gardner-Johnson and Marcus Epps. But this time Marcus Epps followed that receiver over to the strong side. And so they pretty much kept Blankenship on the weak side, but he keyed that crossing route really good, undercut it for the interception. He had a really good play coming downhill to make a hit. I don't remember if it was a screen or a run play, but down at the line of scrimmage. So I thought he flew around pretty good. Obviously, the Christian Watson long touchdown, he was a part of that. He
bad
wasn't
angle,
the only man. Issue. But
that's
he was
a really
part
bad
of
pursuit
it.
Angle.
Yeah, it was a bad pursuit angle. Although to his credit, Christian Watson's fast. I'm not sure that Chauncey Gardner-Johnson would have been able to track him down either. And that was just a weird play. The Eagles had Josiah Scott lined up over a tight end on the weak side of the formation. And then they had Marcus Epps over the slot. Like, there's not a schematic reason for you to have your slot corner not lined up on the slot receiver in man coverage. So they were playing cover 1. Marcus Epps has outside leverage. TJ Edwards didn't drop into the hole deep enough. But even if he does, Watson's going to clear that unless you get an instant win from your pass rush. You get a bad angle from Reed Blankenship. Marcus Epps is never going to keep up on a crossing route from outside leverage against Christian Watson. So that might just be, we've got 2 backups out of our 5 secondary pieces and we just got mixed up. That's the best I can come up with. I really don't know any reason other than that you would have that formation flipped like that. But overall, I thought he played good. And I think you'll see probably some communication issues, but he played a good game and I would expect him to be better this week at taking a week as with starting reps. It's a lot different just stepping in cold off the bench versus having a week to prepare.
Right. Yeah. It's funny because when he got that interception, I was thinking of all the people that say like CJ gets lucky interceptions. And I was like, oh man, maybe they're right. Cause Reed just stepped in and got one himself. So I was like, oh, maybe anybody can do it.
that was an incredible play by the safety too. Like, you know, and
that was better than any of CJ's interceptions all year. Is what you're saying.
No, there was one of his that's up there, but like, that wasn't pressure. It wasn't hit as you're throwing. It wasn't a deflection. Like,
I was just reading Aaron Rodgers.
He read Rodgers and he cut that route, and that was a beautiful play.
Yeah, heck yeah! For the people that are giving him flack for giving Reed Blankenship flack for the angle he took on Christian Watson. For the record, like Shane mentioned, Watson had the 6th fastest 40 time in the draft last year. So he's a quick dude for a guy his size. He was a guy I looked at in the draft as a potential, you know, pairing with Devontae Smith. I was like, ooh, he might be a sneaky option in the second round. So I'm not shocked that he. Once he was drafted to Green Bay, I said, oh, it might take a little bit, but he couldn't land in a better spot. A guy with Devontae just left, he's going to be able to thrive right away. So I was kind of excited. Well, I mean, not on that play specifically, but I'm kind of excited to see Christian Watson thrive for a guy that I was so excited about in the draft. So continuing, I looked at these the snap counts the other day, and I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, I saw Robert Quinn at 11. Is this guy ever, are we getting anything from him this season? Or is this just going to be one of those, like, we tried it, it didn't work out, move on, oh well.
Yeah, I don't know. I think barring an injury, I don't know that you're going to see him a lot. And I don't know that he's going to make an impact. Dang, and
we wasted a 4th rounder.
Especially, think about the defensive tackles. Jordan Davis's practice window is activated today. So you've got Jordan Davis, Linval Joseph, Ndamukong Suh, Javon Hargrave, Fletcher Cox, Milton Williams. Like, when they're all back, you got to think Milton Williams is going to be a game day inactive. They're not going to suit six defensive tackles. And they like to rush Fletcher Cox off the edge sometimes. So I think just it's going to be a numbers game. And Quinn's not giving you anything. I just don't think you're going to see him play very much, barring an injury to like Brandon Graham or Josh Sweat or something.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, just nothing. Like week by week, I'm like, we're going to see more of him. He's going to be more effective. It hasn't been great to this point. One last thing on CJ before we go ahead and go to break to talk about. I think there's some tight end talk you want to talk about. But how much of a drop off are we? Obviously, Blankenship is an undrafted free agent. I know Josiah Scott was kind of cross trained at safety during training camp. Of course, we all complain about Kayvon, but we're going to have to see him at some point. It's going to be by committee. How much of a drop-off do you think it's going to be for these few weeks with CJ gone? I know that you really key in on what he does for the defense and what he's kind of lacking in. Is this going to be a tough hole to fill, or do you think the Eagles will be all right for a few weeks while he's on the mend?
It's going to be a drop-off. One nice thing, though, is playing split field safety looks as much as the Eagles do. Safeties aren't as big of a focal point. Your corners are more important. If you're going to have a spot to be weak, and the Eagles have kind of shown this with how they valued safety as well. Like, don't forget, they were willing to go into the season with Anthony Harris and Jaquiski Tartt and Marcus Epps as their safeties before the Saints just lost their mind and gave Chauncey Gardner-Johnson away. So the Eagles don't value safety super high, and it's partially because of their scheme. So you're going to notice a drop-off, I think. Just given the scheme they play, it should be manageable. It'll be interesting to me what happens once Avante Maddox comes back, because as you mentioned, Josiah Scott cross-trained at safety this offseason. So I'm curious if they will shift Josiah Scott to safety or if they'll just take him off the field and leave Reed Blankenship out there. And it'll probably depend on how he does, you know, in the next week or two.
Yeah, I'm intrigued to see how they do it. Like I said, I was impressed with Reed, but CJ, who still leads the league in interceptions with six, and obviously looking for that new contract, it's a tough sight for him. Anything else you want to hit on before we go to break? We got some rumors to come back and talk about, as well as the upcoming matchup with the Titans and King Henry and how scary that's going to be. Any final points on the Eagles versus Packers, as the Eagles sit at 10-1 with a 2-game lead, I believe, over Minnesota for the top seed in the NFC.
Yeah, I got a question for you.
Yeah,
end of the game, up 7, just a little over 2 minutes left. The Eagles elected to try a 54-yard field goal on a 4th-and-3. Mm-hmm. What'd you think of that decision? What would you have done there?
Well, I was very depressed when I found out. Well, when I first heard they were going to punt it, like I saw something that they were going to punt. I was like, if they punt this ball, that's even worse. I was happy they kicked it. Were they supposed to do something else? You wanted to go for it, didn't you?
If I was ranking it, I'm okay with either going for it or kicking the field goal. The only wrong decision, I think, would be to punt it.
Yeah. But once I saw that, I was like, oh, hell no.
Yeah, I really don't care about an extra 30 yards. I mean, it would have been a little over 2 minutes left. Green Bay had timeouts, so I don't think that gained you anything. I would have slightly preferred, if I was making the call, I would have gone for it. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it's windy. Elliott missed an extra point already in the game. I probably would have went on 4th-and-3. I was fine with the decision to kick, but as long as they didn't punt, I was okay. But, you know, props to Sirianni for putting his faith in Jake Elliott, and it works out. Elliott hits the big kick. So I've never understood Jake Elliott. Like, he'll miss an extra point like twice a year for no good reason. I used to have a running joke that Jake Elliott was like perfect from beyond 40 yards, but mm-hmm. in under 40 yards, he was hit or miss. So the Eagles should just false start till they got outside at the 40 yard line.
Delay a game, run the clock out.
Yeah. He's like better on harder kicks. He misses the layups and he hits the threes. So, anyways, I was fine with the decision. I was just curious what you thought there.
Yeah, anything but punting in that situation. I was I was like, we better not punt this ball. Jake Elliott, though, 17 career 50-plus yard field goals. That's most in franchise history. So another record broken on Sunday. Who would have thought it'd be Jake Elliott with David Akers? I mean, not really good names after that. Alex Henry and other guys out there. but good on Jake Elliott for a guy who was he undrafted? Was he? For a guy
no,
who was,
he was
like
drafted, he was drafted by the Bengals. Actually,
I remember he came from the Bengals. I didn't remember how he made it into the league. But for a guy who came in, you know, for and has that memorable a Super Bowl run, and he stuck with the team, and we gave him flack for that $21 million contract, I think Howie gave him, and we were like, oh man, it's not looking good. He had that one rough year, but glad to see him sustain success. We're going to go to a quick break right here, but when we come back, we have some rumor mills, some things about some potential retired players that may make their way back, as well as previewing the upcoming matchup against the Titans this Sunday. Stay tuned right here to the EPA podcast on Bleeding Green Nation.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Welcome back to the EPA podcast. I'm back here with Victor Williams. Victor, we've seen some rumors floating around on the interwebs about some retired players that might want to make their way back to the Philadelphia Eagles. Obviously, the Eagles lose Chauncey Gardner-Johnson in this game. And immediately rumors start swirling about Malcolm Jenkins. The Eagles are also a couple games into missing Dallas Goedert. And I've seen some rumors out there that are a little more unsubstantiated, but some rumors about Rob Gronkowski. Let's start with Malcolm Jenkins here. If you're Howie, are you picking up the phone? Are you giving Malcolm Jenkins a call out of retirement to come and play for this team?
Yeah, it's interesting because we saw that. Well, first we saw the first rumor, but about DeSean Jackson before he went to Baltimore when he had his a podcast in the city and he said, I'm ready to go. People were like, hey, punt returner, we need a punt returner. And then he went to Baltimore. And then here comes Darren Sproles talking about I can give somebody a good playoff run. I still got it. Everybody gets excited. Oh, man, still need that punt returner. And now here is Malcolm Jenkins, who I think John Clark interviewed him. I think it was the day before Chauncey, like the episode came out, obviously the same day, but he interviewed him the day before Chauncey went down. So thanks for the jinx, John Clark. So thanks for that. But man, I don't know. It's hard with these older guys who are not like, you know, atoned to NFL speed. Obviously Malcolm was very successful during his tenure in Philadelphia. One of the greatest probably free agent acquisitions in franchise history when you really break it down and think about it. But man, he's probably a better option than what Jonathan Abraham, who just got bounced off the Packers practice squad. He tried to make it work over there and it didn't. I think I would rather see, as great as Malcolm is, I think I'd rather see the young kid Reed try and stick it out and see what he can do, a guy who's acclimated with the offense. Malcolm, by the time he gets familiar with whatever is going on in Gannon's defense and is used to NFL speed, Chauncey will probably be back. And because it's only it's a lacerated kidney. Zach Ertz, the thing about Zach Ertz is that he was out for 1 week, but the context is different because Zach Ertz didn't have to lay hits on defense, number one. And number two, Ertz came back because the Eagles were pushing for the playoffs. I believe he got hurt in the season finale against Dallas, was out for the 1 week, and then came back for the wild card game, you know, obviously in pain. So it's a little different here. Malcolm is fun to think about. I don't know if I would do it. And I'm pretty sure Derek Gunn confirmed that the Eagles aren't even thinking about it. Anyway, so while it is a fun thought to think about, I don't know how effective it would be. If he's in shape, I mean, a workout wouldn't hurt.
Yeah, I'd do it in a heartbeat.
You would? Well,
I'd do it in a heartbeat. I just think, I mean, he's a vet.
Because he's the hybrid, right? And he's versatile. He plays all the positions.
Yeah, he can pick up the defense in a snap. Like, he would give you versatility. He can play in the slot, so it helps protect you there, too.
Is he in shape, injury. Though?
He says he is. I mean, I'd bring him in for a workout and see.
There you go. A workout.
He played in the box a lot. So theoretically, you could even go into some single high stuff and put him in the box as a safety. So he'd be good on he was always good on special teams. And you know, I saw people saying, would he be okay with not having much of a role once Chauncey Gardner-Johnson came back? And I was like, well, he's got no role now. And it would be a minor role on a team that's pushing for a Super Bowl in a city that loves you. So I would give him a call in a heartbeat, and I'd give Gronk a call in a heartbeat too. So bring him in.
What is Gronk going to give you? Let's go. What is the reasoning behind Gronk? Because I've tried to wrap my head around it, and I'm just like, I don't know. First of all, I don't know why he would come to Philadelphia. Number two, what does he give you at this stage? When was the last time he played? When did he retire? The Super Bowl year for Tampa?
Yeah.
So he's been out of the league for a year.
I mean, he was at the very least, he's a good run blocker. And people say that about Jack Stoll. He's just not. But you can bring him back. He can be a run blocker for you. He's also, I mean, he's old, but he can catch the ball. He's a passing threat. He played last season for Tampa. So he's only, of course, he retired in 2019. Then he came back and played 2 years with Tampa. And then he's been retired for half a season. But he had 800 yards last year, 14.6 yards per reception. So I'd bring him back just till Goddard gets back. He'd be a better run blocker than Jack Stoll, and he'd be a better receiving option than Grant Calcaterra, albeit, you know, not nearly as good as Goddard. But he'd give you a boost, so I'm all for it. Bring in all the vets, I say.
Yeah, I'm calling Brent Celek before I call Gronk. I will do that. And at least we have the nostalgia if that's going to be the recurring themes. One more rumor I do want to touch on, though, that's not specifically like tied to the Eagles, but how scared of Dallas should we be if they get OBJ? Like, have you given that any thought? Like, should we? Because Dallas is creeping up. I believe they're 3-4 right behind us in the power rankings, and they looked impressive. I believe if the playoffs end today, all four NFC East teams are in the postseason. If the playoffs were to begin today, if Dallas swings it and somehow pulls in OBJ, how worried should we be?
I think Dallas is already kind of a worrying team. They're a very good team. They've got a very, very good defense. When the offense is clicking, when Dak isn't throwing dumb interceptions, which he's done from time to time. He did it this week.
He did on Thanksgiving.
Interceptions in the first half, but then he pulled it out in the second half. But when their offense is clicking, they're really good. And obviously, adding OBJ to that helps. How much it helps, I don't know. Coming off the injury, hasn't played all year. But, you know, we've seen vets come in at this. We've seen Linval Joseph and Ndamukong Suh come in for the Eagles this year. You saw Eric Weddle come in for the Rams last year. You saw OBJ come into the Rams last year. So I'm already concerned about the Cowboys. They're a very good football team. OBJ doesn't move the needle for me a whole lot with them, but I would still hate to see it happen.
Yeah, if I'm the Eagles, we don't need OBJ, but I'm signing him to spite Dallas anyway. That's what I'll do. I'll sign him just to keep him away from there. But I'm with you as much as we dislike Dallas and the rivalry and all that. I was watching them on Thanksgiving, and I was like, I mean, they got a nice little team. That Pollard emergence is something. That Pollard Zeke thing, they finally figured out their roles as Zeke as the short yardage power back and using Tony Pollard and not relegating him to just as a backup running back. That's a nice little offense they got. CD, Dallas fans will scream until their throat is tired that CD now is over AJ Brown in receiving yards. So good for them. But CD is a very good receiver. Obviously, Michael Gallup. When I was watching Michael Gallup on Thanksgiving, I was like, he is like catching everything. This guy is, and they're not like routine catches. Like, he is literally snagging the ball out of the air. So Dallas has some good pieces. We'll see if Dak Prescott can keep away from the turnovers and make them formidable, because we all know how it gets for Dallas in December and in the playoffs, and everything comes crumbling down. So as far as the Eagles are concerned, next game on the schedule for them is the Tennessee Titans. The last home game for a little bit for them. I believe the next 2 to 3 are away games. So they want to get this last home victory before they hit the road and have to see Chicago, Giants a couple times and all of these things. Obviously, the most worrisome thing is King Henry, who is already at 1,000 rushing yards on the season. And he is running with the purpose. He runs guys over. He is the most physical running back in the league. And for an Eagles team that had a tough time with Damian Pierce and just got run over by AJ Dillon, who hadn't even scored since week 1 prior to the Eagles game. Of course, the Eagles give it up on a 20-yard run to AJ Dillon. What is the formula? We got to praise God that the Eagles have to make a decision by Saturday if Jordan Davis is going to play or not in this game. Let's all cross our fingers and pray that Jordan Davis can be here, because if not, it might be a long day Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, Derrick Henry is averaging 3.61 yards after contact.
After contact. It's just disgusting.
Which is sixth in the NFL. And, you know, we've talked about the Eagles and their tackling issues. And so, you know, that could certainly be a tackle. Tennessee wants to run the ball, right? That's not a surprise to anybody. They're ninth in run block win rate at 72%. So they're going to try to pound the ball early. They're going to try to get into short yardage situations. They run into a stacked box on 39% of their runs. They don't even care if you stack the box, which the Eagles don't do, but they wouldn't care if the Eagles did. They're going to try to run the ball, and they do that to set up their play action. 30% of Ryan Tannehill's passes are play action passes. And so it's going to be similar to what you saw the Commanders do. They're going to try to run the ball. They're going to try to get into short yardage situations. They're going to play action pass with Ryan Tannehill, and they're going to try to push the ball downfield when they do. This is a surprising stat, but the Titans actually lead the NFL in 40 plus yard passing plays. They've had 10 this season. So they will take shots deep with Tannehill off of their play action game. It's going to be really important for the Eagles early in this game, hopefully to take a lead, or at least to be able to get the Titans behind the sticks.
Yeah, if you get a sizable lead, that's less running plays. And I'd much rather have the ball in Ryan Tannehill's hands than Derrick Henry's. Derrick Henry averaging 95 yards a game rushing this season. That is just absurd. If you average nearly 100 yards a game, it's just even that means the defense knows it's coming and they can't stop it. And that is scary for Eagles defense that has struggled to this point in the season. Even more scary is that this season, obviously, the A.J. Brown departure has a lot to do with it, but they're even using Derrick Henry as a running back now, or as a receiving threat, which is even more devastating. He had that long run. He fumbled at the goal line, but he had that long screen pass that he took like 70 yards on Sunday. Derrick Henry has nearly 300 yards receiving this season, so that's also something to worry about, because he's somehow become a pass catcher, and I don't want to see a guy like Derrick Henry catching the ball on a screen pass with three blockers in front of him is devastating. I don't know how you're going to get through to that. So let's all hope that the Eagles can try and contain that. Shane, if I had to ask you, who do you think is the Titans' leading wide receiver this year? Who would you guess?
is it Robert Woods?
Just barely Robert Woods. Now, how many yards do you think he has?
I don't know, 442.
350. Yeah. Leading receiver, 351. Treylon Burks right behind him, 334. And then Austin Hooper is there with 257. So the passing attack is not very great. Treylon Burks is getting better by the week, though. He made a really good catch last week. That was A.J. Brown-esque. You know, rose up, grabbed it at the catch point. And that's what the Titans were hoping they were getting when they didn't pay A.J. Brown, traded him, and use that selection on Treylon Burks, who they had paraded as A.J. Brown, a 2.0. If the Eagles do get ahead, say the Eagles get a two-score lead, it's the third quarter, the Titans have to play catch-up, what do you think the game plan becomes? Who do you try to stop in that passing attack? Or do you just zone it out and just hope that Tannehill, you know, gets under pressure and throws a couple turnovers?
Yeah, I would be happy to zone it out and make Ryan Tannehill go on long drives, prevent the explosives, make him drive the field. And you can get pressure on the tight. Like, their offensive line's bad. Mm-hmm. Ryan Tannehill, well, they're bad at pass blocking. They're really good at run blocking, but pass protection is shaky at best. Ryan Tannehill's been pressured on 37% of his dropbacks this year, which is seventh in the NFL. That's up there just behind guys like Justin Fields, Taylor Heinicke, Davis Mills, Zach Wilson, guys that just get pressured a ton. And when he's under pressure, his completion percentage drops 20% and his QB rating drops 23 points. So you can get pressure. Taylor Lewan is on IR, their left tackle. And so a guy named Dennis Daly is their starting left tackle. He's just been really bad. Like, he's allowed 6 sacks and 32 pressures in 10 games. Their right tackle, Nicholas Petit-Fariri, he was a third-round rookie. He was 73rd on my big board going into this last draft. He's allowed 23 pressures. He has not played well. As a team, they're 26th in pass block win rate. And so if the Eagles can get them into passing situations, it's not good for the Titans offense when people know they have to pass. And they're not a creative offense. They're bottom five in terms of like going up tempo, going into shotgun, going into RPOs. Like, this is an under center play action team that doesn't do anything fancy. And I think if the Eagles can get them into passing situations, they're going to struggle.
Did you say 73 on your big board? How many players you got on your big board every year? That's a lot of players to scout, man. I look at maybe like 20, 25.
I think I went to 125 this year.
That's a lot.
I had ever done. I was trying to get through like basically top, day one and two. was what I was trying to get through. Yeah. So
I look at like the top, I pick like 3 to 4 of like my favorites from each position, like not necessarily the top players, but I like zone in on a few that I like scout those guys. And then like, yo, 125 players.
It was a lot. I don't do any other sports. It's all football.
So yeah, that explains it.
I'm not into basketball when football season starts. I'm into draft scouting.
That's fun. That's, I thought I scouted a lot. Holy heck, man. That's crazy. So another matchup that I think will be intriguing is actually the Titans have a pretty good rushing defense as well. And the Eagles, who are arguably running the ball even better than they were last year when they were the number one rushing offense in the NFL. I think this is going to be a matchup to watch. The Titans allow 84.4 rushing yards per game. That's good for third in the league. They only allow 5 rushing first downs per game. That's good for 7th in the league. They allow under half. I mean, okay, so if you were to numerize it, like 0.3 rushing touchdowns allowed per game first, obviously, in the league. They only allow 3.9 yards per rush attempt. That's good for 2nd in the league. And 28.5 percentage of rushing plays resulting in first downs. Good for 5th in the league. So when I was looking at all this, I was pretty shocked because I don't recall the Tennessee having like any bona fide like guys along that offensive line. How are the Eagles going to continue to be effective on the ground against that apparently potent Titans rushing defense?
Yeah, they're first in rushing DVOA. They're first in rushing EPA.
Because of who? Who's on that? Who's on that defensive line?
Jeffrey Simmons is one of the big ones. Jeffrey Simmons was tied to the Eagles a lot in his draft that he came out. I can't remember who the Eagles selected instead.
Was he on your big board? Was he on your big board?
I wasn't doing it quite like that back then. So that's, I don't have big boards going back that far, but he was, so when he came out in the draft, he was basically looking at a redshirt year because he'd torn his ACL. And so the Titans stashed him basically. And he's a phenomenal football player. He's third in run stop win rate. He's also a really good pass rusher. He's got 37 pressures on the year, 7 sacks. And then Denico Autry is opposite him, and he's also very good, more so as a pass rusher, 44 pressures, 7 sacks. And so Autry missed the Bengals game with a knee injury. There's no word yet on this week if he's going to play, but that duo of Simmons and Autry is really good. They've also got a linebacker named David Long.
I was looking at him. Yep. He leads the team in tackles, Becca.
He was a 6th-round pick in 2019 out of West Virginia, and he was actually a safety in college, and he transitioned to linebacker, which is the opposite of what usually happens. I remember I wanted him on day 3 for the Eagles. That was back when the Eagles had no linebackers. I thought he would be a good linebacker, and he struggled his first couple years, but he's really emerged this year, especially as a run defender and as a blitzer. So he generates a lot of pressures. He's a good run defender, so he's going to make plays over the middle of the field. The most impressive thing to me about the Titans' defense, though, is they have a light box on 75% of their snaps. They sit in these 2 high shells like the Eagles do, and yet they manage to have the best rushing defense in the NFL. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting how they've been able to pull that off. A lot of it just comes down to their fantastic front 7. This is the best front 7, I think, that the Eagles will face, unless they get to like the Super Bowl against maybe like the Bills.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch that matchup. While they might be strong in rushing defense, the passing defense is another story. Even if you look at the cornerbacks, because they're a team that has invested a lot of draft capital in recent memory. I remember Christian Fulton in 2020. The only reason I know that name fairly well because he was a guy on my big board. The Christian Fulton.
That's I wanted in the 2nd round
instead of Hurts.
Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, so that was
another. Quarterback wasn't even on my radar, but I wanted Christian Fulton bad.
I wanted Fulton, Zach Bond, Jeremy Chin. Like there was a lot of names. Denzel Mims at the time, but there was a lot of names in the 2nd round that I thought the Eagles were going to pick, and Christian Fulton was one of them. So him in 2020, I believe Caleb Farley at one point. They took Roger McCreary last year, and Roger McCreary has really been the guy who's been targeted a whole lot this season. He's allowed 49 completions this year on 71 targets, 552 yards, and 4 touchdowns on the season. So I assume if the game plan rolls the right way, Jalen Hurts is going to target him a lot through the air, whether it be Smitty or AJ Brown. If AJ's, you know, feeling better than he was last week, throwing up and all that, and if Smitty is okay, he in and out of the blue tent. So that's another matchup I think that the Eagles should be able to take advantage of. Are you anything specific you're looking for as far as the secondary? I'm not too familiar with their safeties. I know they have a good one. Is Byard on that defense?
Is, yeah, or is, they, they've got, so their corners are not that great. It's a lot of undersized guys. And so I think you can make plays on them. Caleb Farley is a guy that they took in the draft. That was a guy I really like, but he's been injury prone in college. That's persisted into the NFL. So he is out.
He has a herniated disc, I think.
Right? Yeah, herniated disc in his back. So he's out for the season. Yeah, Kevin Byard, he's a guy to look out for. Armani Star Hooker safety. Is their other safety. Byard is the guy that you probably want to avoid. But you can make plays against the secondary. They're all undersized. You should be able to do that. They're a very heavy middle field open zone coverage team. So think like the way that the Texans played, the good old school Tampa 2. Now, the Titans mix it up more than that. But that's what they like to do a lot. They run a lot of light personnel. Nickel on 59% of their snaps, dime on 23% of their snaps. And I think this is a game where you're really going to miss Dallas Goedert for the Eagles. Because you think back to the Texans game, how do you attack those two high safety zone coverage looks? You do it with those outbreaking routes, and the Eagles love to throw those to Dallas Goedert. They ran so many corner routes to Dallas Goedert under the safeties against the Texans. They got out of their Tampa too. I don't know. You're not doing that with Jack Stoll or Grant Calcaterra. So that leaves you trying to hit hole shots up the sideline, which Hurts can rip those, but that's a tough throw. They're gonna probably limit your explosive plays because they do have those two safeties sitting up high. So I think it's going to be a grinded out game. It's going to be a slugfest game. The Eagles are going to have to go on long drives. The Titans are just, they're a big physical team that likes to hit hard. And I think they're going to drag you down into the muck with them and make this a dogfight.
Yeah, Kevin Byard, 24 career interceptions on the year. So definitely a guy that Jalen Hurts probably shouldn't be throwing towards. So let's hope they can steer clear of that. Jalen Hurts on the year. When you look at it, and I know like rushing touchdowns and all that, but even if you look at just passing, 17 touchdowns to just 3 interceptions. He's thrown one interception for every 106 pass attempts this season. Why is that like? I feel like that's super impressive. Like the only ones that have less interceptions, I think Geno has 19-3, and I think Tom Brady has 2 picks on the year. That's it. It's the only quarterbacks that have turned the ball over less than Jalen Hurts. Why is this not being talked about more? Like he's very good at ball security and taking care of the ball. I know he had the strip sack last week, but for the most part, man, he does not turn the ball over for a guy who can't, you know, read a defense and all the other narratives last year. But how is this going by the wayside? I feel like people should be talking about how secure Jalen Hurts is with the football.
Yeah, and the important thing is a lot of times you get these low interception players and it's because they will never attempt to throw in a tight window.
Mm-hmm.
And Hurts is not afraid to rip throws. He's
especially so not this year, no.
Yeah, he's so good at putting the ball where only his guy can get to it. He's very careful with the ball, and it's one of the best traits of him. And when you got a good offense, you just take care of the football and you let the offense work. And he does such a good job of that. And, you know, really the only weakness for the offense, I feel like this year, besides, you know, we can set aside like the dumb fumbles and things that happens a little bit. You got to work on that. But the schematic weakness has been against the blitz. They've struggled against the blitz. Well, the Titans don't blitz. They only blitz on about 13% of dropbacks. So that's 30th in the league. And so I'm not super worried about the offense. I think it's going to be tough sledding running the ball. I think the Eagles are going to have to go on sustained drives throwing the ball. But this isn't last year's team. This isn't last year's Jalen Hurts. He's very capable of moving the passing attack. And, you know, I've put out some stats and things and people say you just keep running the ball. And I don't think you have to do that. The Eagles are very good. They're 6th in EPA passing the ball. I don't think you have to try to run your head into a wall here. I think you can open up the passing game a little bit. Let's get AJ Brown his revenge game. That's what I want to see.
Yeah, I don't know how he made it this far without even talking about that. AJ would surely be motivated to go ahead and stick it to the team that was so reluctant to pay him. And AJ has showed why he's been so vital to an offense. And whenever Malik Willis does get the torch, you know, full time, I'm sure he could use a guy like AJ Brown, because the one game he did get to play in this year, it wasn't looking good passing wise. So yeah, very good things as far as Jalen Hurts is concerned, breaking a ton of records, etching his name in the history books, the only player in NFL history for to throw for 6,500 yards and rush for 1,500 yards in their first 30 starts. How do you feel about stats like that? A lot of people give me a flack for saying like, oh, we can like create these kind of stats for anybody. Like, he's the first player to do it. I can't create that. It's just he's the first one to do it. I'm sorry. Like, but I understand you can curate your stats to fit any narrative that you choose. But like, I thought it was a good stat. You know?
I mean, sure, you can make a stat say whatever you want, but these stats are clearly backed up by what you're seeing on the
right. What's the problem, man?
Yeah, I'm good with it.
Yeah, I don't understand what the problem is. Final predictions for Sunday for Tennessee. What you got?
Oh, man. I've gone back and forth on this one.
Oh, you think they're losing?
I don't know. It's going to be a tough game.
I think this is a huge test.
I go back and forth. Like, on the one hand, I think that Tennessee's defense is going to be strong, and mm-hmm. their offense plays into the weaknesses of the Eagles' defense. But on the flip side, I have a hard time envisioning them putting up a lot of points still. So I sort of feel like Tennessee either wins a close one here or the Eagles just sort of blow them out of the water. They're able to jump on a lead early and they force the Titans to play their game trying to catch up. Mm-hmm. And I've gone back and forth on what's going to happen. I'm probably going to keep doing that. The score prediction I made score prediction I made last night on a different podcast. I said Titans 24, Eagles 21. I'm not going to be shocked really with any outcome in this game, unless it was like a Titans blowout. But yeah, this is a tough one. I do think this is the toughest. I think this is the toughest game the Eagles have left on their schedule. I think it's a tougher game than the Dallas game. And obviously the Dallas game being a rivalry in Dallas on Christmas Eve for the division, like it's more impactful, but this isn't the paper Tiger or Titans team last year that was the one seed in the AFC. Like, I feel like this Titans team is better than last year's Titans team. Extremely well-coached and physical. So I'm going to say that the Titans take this in a close one, but I really hope I'm wrong.
I was going to say 23-17 Eagles, and that is, I just pulled up the spread and the Eagles are 5.5-point favorites. So there's no way that they win by six. Exactly. So that was my prediction. So now I'm going to change it to 20-17 just because I don't know if they cover. Yeah, I say 20-17. I'm with you though. Definitely close. Going to be a grinded out type of game. I don't envision either side blowing out the other. I do see that the Eagles probably get a lead in the second half and the Titans, like you mentioned, get caught playing catch up. They have to try and throw the ball. The Eagles make them pay with a turnover probably, and they'll eke it out. I think it's an underrated Titans team. I do like Vrabel. I do like Derrick Henry. I do like their defense. I've never been a Tannehill fan. People last offseason were like, I would take Tannehill over Jalen Hurts. Never in my life. I don't know why that was ever a conversation, but I think the Eagles do eke it out by 3 points. I appreciate everyone who tuned in to this edition of the EPA podcast. That's Eagles Player Analysis with myself, Victor Williams, as well as Shane Half. You can follow me on all social platforms, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, wherever you digest your content. Be sure to do that over at the Philly Pod. Be sure to rate the show 5 stars. Leave reviews. Each and every review does help bring Bleeding Green Nation to more Eagles fans, NFL fans, football fans alike. Shane, where can the people find you and your work and your videos and everything that you do and you get dragged for on Twitter because you apparently hate Jalen Hurts? So tell everybody where you openly hate on Jalen Hurts.
I apparently openly hate on Jalen Hurts at @half_TPL on Twitter, where I have like a 6-to-1 positive to negative tweet ratio.
Facts.
Take that for what it's worth. You can find me on YouTube at Shane Half NFL, where I put out a lot of all 22 content. Going to have a lot less of that this week with the sick kids, but I do have a video out right now breaking down what happened on both of the interceptions of Aaron Rodgers. And I'll have a couple more trickling out later this week. So make sure you follow me there and make sure you read those tweets before you reply to them.
Yes. For you people out there, when you remove RPOs and prove that Jalen Hurts is a good quarterback, regardless of the situation, that is hating on Jalen Hurts. So that's where you can find all that content over there. Follow me at the Philly Pod. We will catch you guys next week on another episode of the EPA podcast, hopefully talking about a win and the Eagles being 11-1. We'll catch you guys next time. Thank you guys for listening to BGN Radio at Bleeding Green Nation. Go Birds.
Go Birds.